Welcome to the Sounds of Success, brought to you by the National Association of Professional Martial Artists. This audio magazine is a tool for generating profitable ideas and for taking your business to new levels of excellence and performance. Here you'll find real-life case studies of school owners just like you who have applied our proven successful business and marketing principles to their school and are creating the business of their dreams as a result.
Lots to accomplish today. Michelle will be joining us in just a couple of minutes. Three big topics for the day. First is we have a bunch of upcoming events that we need to talk about, the Denver boot camp and training session, and then our meeting attached to all that stuff. And then we also have a lot of stuff happening on the new member site. We've had a couple of technical issues, as we knew we would. That's why we wanted you guys to sort of beta test all that stuff for us and make sure that, you know, you kind of look through and any issues or problems that you found we knew about and we could address them. And we're actually making really good progress on that. So I'm pretty happy about how that's moving so far. And then we're going to talk a little bit about launching these high-level programs. We have a lot of new folks that are, well, I don't say new, but we have a lot of folks who are in the Performer program right now who are kind of at that genesis stage of transitioning into a system where they have a parallel ascension model, where they have or just plain an ascension model at all. So that's number, three. And then four, we want to talk a little bit about student quality and retention systems. And what sort of your best strategies are, and how we're going to integrate that stuff in our Denver event. So, item number one, I guess, is as you all know, there is every year at the end of the year. I guess this year it's beginning of November. It's our final Inner Circle Peak Performer Mastermind meeting of the year, but it's also we couple it with the Mile High Karate Black Belt Testing and Boot Camp. Retreat, which every year we take all of the people who are testing for higher ranks of Black Belt, and they really make it difficult for them. They really make it hard on them, right? Our the kind of the model is we really want to have a challenging Black Belt examination. So it's basically a three-day test. You know, we take them up into the mountains, and they have to deal with high altitude, and, you know, they work out for basically 2.5 days, let's say, right? They get maybe 4 or 5 hours of sleep in the middle, and it's really kind of it's an interesting process. But to make a long story short, the Inner Circle Key Performer and Inner Circle Mastermind meeting will be on November 3rd and 4th. Let me make sure I tell you exactly the right dates. November 3rd and 4th, it's a Thursday and a Friday. So you'd want to fly in Wednesday night and then, you know, drive out to Keystone. It's in Keystone, Colorado. So it's out in the mountains. And it's really a cool little resort town. It's really kind of an interesting place to kind of go get some clarity and, you know, really lock yourself in the room with a lot of sharp people. And, really focus on your business rather than working just in your business, right? So it's definitely an interesting experience. And so the Inner Circle Peak Performer meeting will be on the 3rd and the 4th, the Thursday and the Friday. So you'd want to fly in Wednesday and be ready to hit the ground running Thursday morning, 9 a.m. And then starting Friday afternoon, the students and people that are coming out examining in the Mile High Karate, world, we'll be starting a show Friday afternoon for their examination. And then, which you guys have basically, unfettered access. You can come and kind of watch and see and ask questions and check out whatever you like, right? So you can come and check out the whole thing and see what it's all about. And then we'll kind of walk through whatever questions you've got about it. And it really is an interesting experience, and it really is worth kind of checking out and kind of investigating the culture and how everything kind of works together. I mean, you're going to see these guys, again, like I said, working out for, 3 days virtually. They're doing their examinations on their reading requirements, and, it's comprehensive testing, so they have to perform every technique, every form, everything from white belt all the way through their current rank, and you know, that sort of thing. So it's an interesting experience anyway. It's very old school, but it's also very challenging, right? It's very challenging, and it's an interesting experience. When they graduate from the thing on Sunday afternoon, they really feel like they've been through something. The process has really been modeled after Tony Robbins' Date with Destiny type activities, that type of a seminar. So anyway, that's that kind of process. So on Thursday and Friday, it's our Peak Performer Inner Circle meeting, and this similar to the last meeting we had where we did our sales training boot camp, we're going to also sort of include or kind of bundle together a bit of an instructor training, instructor skills, teaching skills, quote-unquote boot camp as well. So we're going to go all day on Thursday for our first day meeting. We're probably going to run pretty late so that we can make sure we get, hot seats done with everybody. Then we'll do, part of the day on Friday. And then transitioning Friday afternoon, what I'd really like for everybody to contribute is, let's say, four or five of your most successful, your favorite class management skills, right? The things that your instructors in your school have to do to have a successful class, right? What type of discipline, when a student is unruly, how do you handle it? Or when a student has a hard time understanding a sidekick, how do you handle that? And those types of things, right? So, and then in addition to that, maybe your top five or six or ten favorite methods to teach a certain martial arts technique or a certain activity, right? So, you guys see a lot of times on our DVD and on the virtual classroom on the members' website, lots of teaching strategies, right? Lots of physical, technique-y, how do I teach sidekick type stuff, right? So any of that type of stuff, we'd really like for everybody to bring to the table and share as a group. So, again, we have, 25 or 30 really smart people in a room all sort of bringing to the table their best, their favorite teaching, stuff, right? So that's going to be the rest of the day on Friday. So, I'd really like everybody to kind of come prepared and ready to contribute on all that stuff. And I know I've got, Master Oliver and I and Master Smith have a good number of strategies sort of already pre-planned for that to be able to contribute as well. So that's kind of like the quick outline for what we're going to be accomplishing out there. So, again, you can, you're welcome and encouraged to stay for the weekend and sort of watch the activities and kind of get involved in what they're doing over Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Certainly, you'd want to fly in on Wednesday night and then, get out to the mountains and, breathe in some thin air for a day, right? And in this case, make sure everybody brings, martial arts uniform and all that sort of stuff. So that's item number one. I just want to make sure we have that off on the table. Second thing, and I think this is like really important. Master Oliver is with us now, and Master Oliver, we have a number of inner circle people forum members. We have like 18 of these new guys, and many of them are in. They're in a similar stage right now. They're in the process of launching. They have virtually no ascension models, right? So typically, when a student comes in, they're enrolling on some kind of a program. And they just kind of stay in that program for like ever, right? There really isn't anything next. There's not a next step for them until maybe black belt or so. So a lot of these guys, the Mashamas and James O'Connor and, a big group of folks are in that process right now of kind of recalibrating their school and implementing a process that moves people up to the next level. And, when you did this with the schools in Denver implementing the leadership program, I mean, that was a big revolution in that organization. And obviously, when I did it down here in my school, it was, a huge opportunity, right? So it seems like that's a difficult concept for some of our folks to understand. I think really what happens is they just get confused with complexity, right? So maybe you could help us, help them and us just kind of focus on, like, the big rocks, right? Like, what's really important and kind of breaking down the simplest components.
Yeah, well, and let's shift gears here for a second, Toby. I've got Master John Worley on the phone with us, so let's welcome him to the call. And Master Worley, are you with us?
I am there. Yes, thanks.
Oh, good, 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 good. Hey, it's fabulous to have you here with us today. And let's give everybody a little thumbnail in case they're not familiar of your background. You started martial arts late 60s-ish?
Yeah, I started my training down in Texas in 1967. Before a lot of those guys were born, I'm sure. And I was trained in the system down there that was, from Junery, Alnestein, Pat Burleson, all those guys that everybody's read about all these years. And my brother and I, Pat Worley, along with, Jeff Smith and several others left Texas. It was kind of an exodus. It was weird, during that time frame. I don't really want, we've all talked about this. Nobody knows why it happened, but there was a period of time in the early 70s. We left and went to Washington, D.C. in 1970. But then there were other guys that all from Texas that just exported, went out to different parts of the country and opened up martial arts schools, and a lot of the guys are still out there today. So it was really a unique time at that during those years. My first teaching job was in Washington, D.C. with June Rhee. And Master Rhee basically took all of us guys out of Texas and then taught us karate. And we could come up there, we could kind of fight a little bit, but we didn't know anything at all about martial arts, most of us. And so he did a great job, and it was a terrific experience. And then in 1973, after about 3.5 years at Junior Institute, I and Gary Hestelow, another guy from Texas, made our way up to Minnesota and opened our first school up here in 1973. Shortly after that, less than a year later, my brother Pat came up. And then after that, Larry Carnahan came up it's probably 4 years later. And at one time, all of us were partners together, were five of us, including Gordon Franks. And then we operated that way for about 10 years and decided that we needed to split things up. We were kind of having a little bit of infighting going on, and that wasn't any fun at all. So we kind of split up, and Mr. Carnahan and I have remained partners, and Mr. Franks and Mr. Worley have remained partners, and we have a very good relationship with those guys today, much better than when we were partners. So that's kind of that's the quick 35-year history.
Yeah. Well, and to expand from it a little bit, am I correct that right now your organization has around 20 schools, and you personally own and operate about 10? Is that correct?
My wife and I, and my son, my family, and daughter-in-law own and operate 11 schools, national karate schools. There are a total of 20 national karate schools in the Twin City immediate area. But then there's also two in St. Cloud area, which is a town of about 75,000 people that are maybe 60,000 that are north of here. And then in Rochester, Minnesota, we have a school. And then back about 15 years ago, maybe longer, one of our guys who had been with me all through junior high school, and college, went down to the Chicago area, and he has four schools that are doing very well down around Chicago. And then we had a fellow, one of his guys, went over to Milwaukee. So I think there's a total of about 28 or 29 national karate schools, and all of those schools operate under a license agreement with us, and so that's how we've expanded, as opposed to having any kind of a franchise or those kind of things. We just kind of kept it simple, really. So.
Yeah. And Toby was talking about, we've got on the call a whole bunch of schools that are right now between 5,000 and 15,000, looking to get to 20,000 to 30,000 as rapidly as possible.
Sure.
And of course, you've coached your staff through that many, many, many times. You've got somebody who's kind of on the threshold of making a breakthrough and getting ready to move to the next level. What are some of the things you focus them on and some of the things you teach them?
We just try very hard, number one, to keep a very tight control on what goes on inside the schools in the way of curriculum. We've always maintained, we've always done that, and by that I mean we really don't let people deviate a lot from what we believe should be the core curriculum. And we have a standard that we have maintained over the years, and everybody, all of our testing happens under one roof. We get all the people together, with the exception of the guys in Chicago. But the guys, all the guys in Minnesota, all test at the same time, and we just had an example here about a week ago, and it had, I think, 96 people testing. And honestly, if you were to look at these folks, you wouldn't tell what school they were from. They all looked the same. And so we encourage them to keep that very tight. We feel that that's very, very important. That all started from June Reed. June Reed put a very, as you know, Master Oliver, you know, having been there, he always put a great premium on teaching good classical karate. And that really provides the foundation for our curriculum. And we try to encourage them in that way. We're always available to them to answer questions or help them through any particular difficulties that they're having. But as we all know, everything really starts and ends in the classroom and with whoever it is that's the main person out there in that classroom. If they're doing a good job and if they're really taking care of their students and really working to produce a good quality, as Mr. Reed used to tell us, you know, you don't chase the dollar, you chase the job. Do the job right, and the dollars take care of themselves.
Right, right.
I don't know if that tells you anything, but that's kind of been our philosophy.
Well, I think a lot of schools that are at the lower level is oftentimes they do it, and correct me if you think differently about this, but they overcomplicate what they're teaching to beginners.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And don't recognize that the first year is about getting them to the second year. And you're going to create quality martial artists if you get them to black belt, almost no matter what you teach. And you're going to create dropouts if you either don't renew them early, don't get them committed to train long term, and don't get them enthusiastic enough about it and making it too complicated early on.
Yeah, nobody cares how good your white belts are.
Yeah.
And that's it. I mean, yeah, exactly. I think the simpler you can make that, and again, that's why, again, we put a lot of emphasis on classical karate, is because it's very clean cut, it's very simple, and it's, you know, black and white. So it's easy, really, to teach that. And if you start trying to get too complicated in any area, then I think people can become very frustrated. And, you know, as we know, frustration will cause people to drop out quicker than anything else. And you can beat them to death, and they'll keep coming in, but if they get frustrated, they're gone.
Yeah.
And so we try to make that a process so that, you know, every time they do make a promotion, then, you know, the curriculum is expanded, but not dramatically, so that they're not jumping into a whole new system anytime they make a move.
Right.
So we gradually just try to ease them up, and yeah, you're right, exactly. It's very important to try as early as you can to get them involved in it, you know, get them more committed into a longer program. We find that people.
Mr. Oliver, if I can.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry, Mr. Willie. I saw you were dying. I wanted to draw a parallel, if I could, real quick. You know, Metro Oliver, if you were in Metro Orley, by the way, hi. We haven't met, but if I were to draw a parallel with a bunch of our new peak performers members, they should be thinking about this in the same terms of their own training in the business aspects of their business. See, if you're a white belt and you think that by next Tuesday you should be a red belt, you're going to get yourself overwhelmed and frustrated and, frankly, pissed off because you can't learn everything fast enough, right? So this process, this peak performer, this inner circle kind of coaching process, it's really about how to kind of, you know, do the same thing you would do for your white belt. Peel away all the unessentials. Get really good at the fundamentals, right? Get really good at those fundamentals, and then it makes everything much more simple, right? Once you get really good at turning an intro into an enrollment and then turning an enrollment into a renewal, all the other stuff you can worry about later, you know? Get good at the fundamentals first. You know, don't let yourself get too overwhelmed by, you know, how much cool stuff there is to learn. Don't worry about internet marketing. Don't worry about any of that stuff yet, right? Get the fundamentals down first. So I think it's a direct parallel to perhaps the experience that many of our guys are having now.
Well, and you can get to a very profitable school if you can just figure out how to get enough people to walk in the front door, get enough of them to make a decision to enroll, and get enough of them to make a decision to commit to train on a long-term basis.
Yep.
And truthfully, if you master those three things, everything else is detail.
And Mr. Albright, I would submit that the word enough frankly, you can run a very prof. You can run a $30,000 a month school with 10 enrollments a month.
Now you can run it with 5 enrollments.
Yeah, very, very easily, right? So a lot of our, I think in some cases, a lot of our folks, they know that our target is 20 to 30 enrollments a month, and they get a bit perhaps exasperated by the size of the number. But in reality, if you have a tight, if you have tight retention and a good upgrade process, with, like you said, 5, 6, 7 enrollments a month, you could easily have a school of 200 students and, you know, $400,000 to $500,000 a year in revenue.
Yeah, or certainly make it a six-figure income. But, Master, let's go back to a fundamental premise that you mentioned a minute ago. How important is it early on into the curriculum to structure it really so that it only does two things, make sure they have fun and help them set a vision of being a black belt?
Well, all of that, obviously, is especially when we're dealing with so many kids, and they've got to be having fun. They have to be having fun. The parents have to be able to see that they're making some level of progress. If they're just out there running around and having fun, but there's no discipline, there's no sense that they're really learning anything of value, then they're not going to continue to pay our tuition rates. You know, they're going to take them to a rec center or throw them in a swimming pool. And so, you know, we need to be able to show evidence that these children are progressing and making some level of progress. And one of the earliest and best ways to do that, of course, is to get kids to start to alter somewhat their behavior. And we can do that really pretty effectively. And when the parents start seeing that, and if they start to see them develop some level of ability, and especially if they have an opportunity to see, you know, kids who've been with the program for a while and can see really where they're headed, I think it's, you know, that's, I think, are the things that you need to do to make a parent be willing to go out and say, I'm gonna go ahead and have this 7-year-old enroll in a 3-year program. And, you know, really we're about the only place in America that does that. I mean, I think, when they have kids that age, I guess maybe gymnastics, they do that sort of thing, but I don't think they have to commit to those kind of programs. We're able to do that. And obviously we all need to do that in order for us to be successful.
Yeah. Well, I think the analogy is we've got to be getting the parents to think and thinking of ourselves as a private school. And if we think of it as a gym or think of it just as a recreational activity, we price ourselves accordingly.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if we're a high-end private school with a curriculum that's a 3, 4, 5, 7-year curriculum, then it changes the whole dynamic of the interaction. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, we are different. And you know, the schools that are professional schools, whether they're a 1,500-square-foot school or a 10,000-square-foot school, if they're doing the job properly, then you aren't a rec center. You aren't anything like that. And it's easy enough for parents to recognize that. And parents are willing to invest in their children. They'd be happy to do that. If they see the value and they see that, you know, you've got committed people out there who are dedicated to doing a job of really improving my child on so many different levels, and there's no, I mean, there really is, short of them losing their jobs, you know, that's, their drive tuition is one of the last things they'll quit paying. And it's justified because their kids are getting great value from the training. And as long as it's being run in a very professional manner by professional people, but you can't trick people. You can't do it with smoke and mirrors. You can't go out there and pretend that you're going to work hard with them and you're really going to bust your chops to make this kid something that he's not really designed to be, you know, initially. But if you're out there doing the job day after day, then yeah, you can certainly be successful and have great success and be dedicated to doing good work.
Absolutely. Well, one of my pet peeves recently is it seems like our industry, there's been a few that are kind of the charlatans teaching high pressure sales,
yeah,
without focus on service and so forth.
No,
and
good. Short term.
Yeah. Well, and long term, of course, we're trying to create a 5, 10, 20-year relationship with people, and you can't start that on a lie.
Oh,
or start it on something that's going to fracture that relationship. And your schools have been very successful in Minnesota for, let me track back, since 1974.
Yeah, so, actually. Yeah, we helped the first one.
Yeah. So, a long time. My 28-year anniversary in Denver was just this last August. I think that's...
I just saw that. Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you. That makes like 38 years for you in Minnesota.
Yeah.
So give us some thoughts. What are some of the... I had a question a minute ago I was going to come back to. You at one time, I remember visiting, and you had this beautiful, elaborate, very expensive... 10,000 square foot school with multiple classrooms.
Yep, we did.
And
we called that the super school, and it really at the time, I think it was pretty much unique. I wasn't aware of anybody in the country that had done that. And it was, it was a bomb for probably 5 or 6 years. And it was about, if I recall now, it was about 12,000 square feet. We had offices there, and we had a little health club on the second floor. And then the main school had two big classrooms and then a separate training room and then a couple of big dressing rooms with all the stuff and a whirlpool and all that stuff. It was very nice. What happened is that the road that we were on, which was a major traffic carrier in the western suburbs of Minneapolis, went through a 10-year project to become an interstate. And literally, people could not get to us. We went from getting about 100 introductories a month to about 15 in a matter of days.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was devastating. We hung in there for quite a long time, and then we finally just couldn't, because it was, like I say, it was a 10-year project, and people, our staff would call and say, I can't figure out how to get in. So it killed us. And but we rocked for a good time there. And since then... What I did after that is I said, well, I don't want to necessarily go out and get myself into that position again, because that was a huge investment, and it was we were doing $35,000-$40,000 a month, and this was back in 79 or 80. It was a long time ago to be doing those kind of dollars.
Well, probably the two top schools in the country at the time were that school and. The Chuck Norris School in Virginia Beach.
Yeah, I think that, as I recall, that they had a great, great success going there.
And similar facilities.
We just decided that rather than have so much of our success lumped into one facility, that we were better off going with smaller facilities and more of them. And we required less market area. Also, we were starting to see more and more schools opening of other schools. And we just thought, well, rather than having to have such a big drawing area for a school to support a school, 100 people a month, it takes, they've got to come from a ways away. It takes a fairly large demographic to get there. And so that's what we did. It was a lot less risk.
Hello? I think we lost them. I'm sure they'll call back in just a moment. Let me see here. Yeah, I believe we're still live. I think they just dropped, not us. So, okay. All right, well, we'll be back with Master Worley in just a moment, which actually, it's a really useful opportunity. Again, Master Worley's expansion in those schools, again, kind of reiterates what we were talking about and what we're going to transition back to in just a few minutes. If you're operating a martial arts school like Health Club, which means low price, and Health Club is a bad example, but like a recreation, means low price, no commitment, easy to sign the initial agreement, right? Easy to get somebody enrolled, because there really isn't anything to object to, right? The price is so low, they won't object, and there's no commitment, so there's no objection there and all that sort of stuff, right? To talk about the type of model that we know is much more profitable, much more stable, much more, and serves the customer at a higher level. It is incrementally more difficult to get the sale done, right? It's incrementally more difficult to get an enrollment. People are going to have questions in some cases about whether they can afford it or not, and that's okay. People are going to have questions about the term or the commitment, from time to time, and that's okay too. It's just a matter of You have to be only a little bit better, incrementally better.
Well, you're back.
Good. I'll finish my sentence. You only have to, and actually this reiterates, Master Worley, what you were just saying. To kind of transition psychologically from being, quote, like a club to a real school, it does take incrementally more effective sales strategies, right? You have to be a little bit more persuasive and be able to help people see how they can afford it and to justify the commitment. But it's exponentially more valuable to you in dollar signs, but it's also exponentially more valuable to the student in terms of the service that they get, in terms of the outcomes that they can expect. Because they're actually going to stay with you. They're actually going to be a student and believe and act like they're in a private school and they're there to get an education. So I thought that was useful to reiterate while you were sort of MIA.
Well, yep, I would agree with that. You know, we
did we lose him again? Wow. Well, that's interesting. I think we should all blame Apple for the iPhone, the constant Android and Apple battle that Metro and I have. Usually it's me, so we won't cast too much blame. But anyway, so I guess let me restart that comment. So again, you know, when you're moving from no contract, no commitment, low price to, you know, higher price, contract, commitment, pay on the EFT, electronic draft, all that sort of stuff, right? You do have to be deliberate on how you present that to the customer. But that skill is infinitely easier to master, right? I mean, you can master that set of skills in an hour than it is to you know, the skills of delivering what you're already delivering, right? So with a little bit of tweaking on the front-end enrollment process and then on the renewal process, it's a huge increase in opportunity for both you and the student. The example that I like to use, and I used it unfortunately yesterday on my key performer calls, I had to use the example a couple times.
The third is the charm here.
You're there.
Well, we'll give it a shot one more time.
We will.
Let's try again. While you were gone, we all blamed Apple and the iPhone for selling lots and lots and lots of really cool devices, but that, you know, don't work. So usually it's my Android phone that screws everything up, so, you know.
Exactly. We have this running debate. I've become an Apple fan because I got tired of this crap that didn't work. But
the real story is he got the iPhone because he was tired of stuff that doesn't work. And how many iPhones, Master Oliver, is this now that you've gone through in the last year and a half? I think it's four or five, you know? Are you kidding me? Okay, well, so we're not going to depend on them to return. Unbelievable. Okay, so let me kind of get back on that brainwave again. Here's the deal. The example that I had used a couple of times yesterday I think is really useful for everybody. Okay, and it's useful to depersonalize the martial arts business because you're in it, and it's, you know, we get emotionally invested, right? We have all the traditional mess that we were brought up with, and we have all this baggage. And I think it's really useful to look outside your industry for examples and models that you can model that are parallel to what you're doing and that have the same long-term objectives. So the example that I used yesterday, two times, was, you know, a good friend of ours is Chris Tomczak. He runs actually the largest chiropractic franchise in the U.S. He's very, very, very smart, very sharp guy. We've done a bunch of marketing work with him, and I continue to. And his version of his business was chiropractic care, right? So someone comes in for chiropractic care. They have pain in their back, right? They, you know, slipped a disc, or they were in an accident, or for whatever reason, they've come in to try to solve a problem. And they're trying to solve problem A. They have pain in their back. Their, you know, fingers tingle, or whatever the case may be. They have some kind of a problem that they're trying to solve. So they come into the clinic, and he puts them through an intro, right? They take x-rays, they do range of motion exercises, they test all that sort of stuff. Then they do kind of like an initial analysis, an initial treatment, I guess, if you want to call it that, but they do kind of like an initial lesson, like a first intro. And then they send them home with a bunch of material and, you know, stuff that they have to, you know, read and, you know, experience. Then they come back in and they do something called the discovery of findings, right? So they sit the client down and they say, okay, look, your back is this messed up. It's going to take 2 treatments a week times, you know, 7 weeks or 10 weeks or 4 months to fix your problem A. Here's how we get started. It's $3,000 for the course of training, the course of treatment. How do you want to handle it, right? Okay, so that's program A. They solve problem A, just like we do in our martial arts schools, right? We enroll a student because Mrs. Jones wants Johnny to be more focused and have a higher level of self-esteem, right? So then in that business, they start to get results, right? They go through a number of treatments. The patient feels less pain. They feel better about themselves. They feel good. And in fact, they over-deliver the service, right? There's this aromatherapy area that they go through, and they have, oh, you're back.
Well, in theory, I told Master Worland if we drop once again, I'm going to give up, and we'll schedule a follow-up. I'm going to need to talk to Master Worley out of 3 or 4 hours if he would be so gracious, because he's got too much depth of knowledge here. But Toby, before we got dropped the first time, the question I had for Master Worley was, if you're in a school, pick a number, 1,200 square feet, 2,000 square feet, and you're wanting to do what you've seen some other people do, is do the 6,000 or 10,000 or 12,000. Square foot super school. How do you evaluate that, and is that the route to the most net profit and least headaches? And so, Master Worley, that question for you.
Well, you know, I think some people would want to, you know, look at having a large school. I mean, you can do that, and you can certainly have, in good times, you can do very well. You can employ some people there, and you can have a very impressive kind of a facility. But then in bad times, we all have good and bad times, you know, your rent probably doesn't go down. And so having those kind of big rent numbers facing you every month can be daunting at best. Being a singular or smaller school, one that requires less support, you know, less rent, if a person has one of those kind of schools, they can pretty much control everything. If things get really tough, they can run the whole show themselves if they have to. But you can't do that in a 10,000 square foot school, and so there's certainly some big, you know, risk. Certainly, much more risk in my mind to having the single large facility as opposed to having one or two or three smaller schools. And certainly, you can make a good living out of one small school. It doesn't have to be a big school, that's for sure. And it's been my experience too that when people do start to expand, you can. Typically, you have the one charismatic leader or owner or whatever that makes the school work, and then as that person starts to expand into multiple locations, they can't be in those other multiple locations all the time, and so there's some loss. When you make copies, sometimes those copies don't come out as brilliant. Now, on the other side of that, I have guys out in my school today. I'm not in a school today. I'm pretty much an administrator. But I have guys in my school today that I think were probably better than I was when I was out there. And that's really what you would hope would happen, is that you're able to train people to do a better job than you can. But there's no question that having the school like we had there in the early 80s was a huge risk, and it almost put us out of business whenever things went south for us.
Yeah, my friends Tim and Dave Kovar in Sacramento, they did the same thing. They had the 13,000 square foot school.
Yep.
And Tim and I did a lot of work back and forth on marketing and so forth. His personal reference was feeding the beast. In his mind, you know, he had to have 40 new students, 45 new students, 50 new students every month just to stay even.
Yep.
And it became feeding the beast, because it was such a grind to keep it at the numbers that it was doing, and to support the overhead that they had.
Yep. And as I say, you know, in good times, Karate Kid movie comes along, and that's what happened. You know, we had Karate Kid movie come along about that time, sometime after we'd been in there for a while. And, you know, all of a sudden you got droves of people running in there, and you don't know how to handle them all. But that doesn't last. And we all know that we're going to have good times and we're going to have bad times. And so it's just hard to manage, that type of an overhead and keep feeding the beast, exactly, when things get a little tough.
Yeah. And the other thing that you said earlier, and I want to reemphasize it for everybody. See, if you're thinking about this as a school, really your revenue and your results come from retention, come from developing long-term students. They don't come from just that front insurance. And so talk to everybody a little bit about how you develop the instructors and the staff to really be thinking that way and to take that view of it.
Well, first off, we have a pretty long process by which we qualify and train instructors. And as most of us know, you can't go out there and run an ad in the paper for karate instructors and have any success with that. And so, over the years, I think probably 90% of our instructors have come from within. And by the time that we get them ready to start working as an assistant, that's usually how it works. They come in as a student, work with them and get them 3, 4, 5 years later, they're black belt, and then the ones that have the potential and the desire, we can put them into a backup role assisting in a school, and after a period of time, you can identify the people that have the potential, the desire, and the ability to grow into a bigger role, and then as that happens, then we try to find a place for them. And that's one of the reasons that we actually ended up growing schools, was because we were starting to have really good quality people, and we wanted to be able to keep them. And one of the ways of doing that was to be able to have them have a school that you would put them in and let them run that school. But it's an ongoing process, and it never ends. We've got guys with us that 15, 18 years that have been running schools for us for that period of time, and they're still learning. They're still learning and getting better. There's still things that we do periodically to try to remotivate and re-stimulate them. They all have an appreciation, I think, of how important it is to develop that long-term relationship with students. They all know that you can't make it just on the folks coming to the front door, that you have to be able to keep people involved for years and years if you're going to be successful.
Absolutely. Across your organization right now, what are some of the key ways that you're consistently generating new students coming in the front?
Well, as we all know, word of mouth is still the number one and best way to do that. And we have a couple of events that we do, and I'm sure unlike a lot of places. We do a thing called the Winter Carnival each January that tends to have a real successful result for us. And we really encourage our students. We tell them, this is our one and only annual student, drive, so to speak. And we have a big carnival in each of the schools, and the kids get out there and play games and win prizes and get treats and do all that kind of stuff. And they all bring in friends, and that's the deal. They bring in friends, and then the friends all get free introductories. From that, we usually end up with a huge influx of new people in January. A lot of those people are not going to continue. They're not serious. But a good portion do. And so that always gives us a pretty good jolt in January. And then throughout the year, we do a fair amount of direct mail type advertising. That seems to still be what tends to work best for us, although I'm never happy with it, but you keep thinking, it's doing something for us. We do a couple of other little things throughout the year, but at the same time, we don't want to get to the point where every time a student walks in the door or every week they're coming up on something else where they're asking me again to bring a friend. We find that tends to be distracting a little bit. And maybe it starts to turn some students off a little bit. So I think there has to be a good balance with that stuff myself.
Yeah. Well, and a principle that I've identified is that most referrals come best through events. So something like your carnival is what so many people do is they give their students a stack of guest passes and go, hey, go sell your friends on the idea of doing martial arts. Well, most of our staff would have a hard enough time doing that with somebody who hasn't already expressed an interest. It really doesn't work to turn your, quote, your students into salespeople, but it works really well to have them have something exciting that they're enthusiastic about bringing their friends down to for its own reasons.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's right. A certain number of people are going to bring you friends no matter what, because they're fired up, they're excited about karate, they're talking to their friends about it, the parents are excited about it, they're telling their friends about it. And so you're going to get those if you're doing a good job. You're going to get some of those people just because you should. But you're right. The things that seem to have the best impact are those kind of events whereby people can get excited and bring their friends in. And again, it's not. We found out a while ago that if you try to make it, you know, just an open house and karate demonstrations and those kind of things, didn't have the same buzz. Didn't seem to have the same effect. But by having these, you know, non-karate activities, just all-out games and just fun, very social. What really, the people that do best with it are the people who are the best prepared for when they walk in the door. Mm-hmm. Because it's chaotic. I mean, there's three times the number of people that are normally in your school. And so if you're not organized and ready for it, if you don't have people whose only job is to talk to the guest parents and to get them to sit down and try to make appointments that night, then it's not nearly as successful. So we have people who that's all they do. I mean, we've got, you know, three or four people whose only job, and it's usually our best people, our only job is to take care of the visitors, take care of the guests. And that, again, that's we've had some people that the same thing. They'd have 50 guests come in and get three appointments. And so, you know, it's really important that people are prepared for it. Get a lot of parents involved. They like to help out. You know, get them all in there doing stuff, and then be prepared to handle them and talk to the guests and maximize the opportunity.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's so important. On an ongoing basis, what kind of instructor training processes do you run that's on a regular basis with your staff and with your licensed school?
Well, we have for our 11 schools. We have weekly meetings, staff meetings, that are both physical training meetings and business meetings. And my son, who's our chief operating officer, is the guy that conducts all of our physical training program. And so, you know, the guys get out there and work out. And that way, he, you know, based on his job, too, he has a big job. He goes around and is basically in charge of quality control. So he goes out to the schools, and we have screenings when we do our black belt tests. We don't test people at the exam itself. We have a screening process so that by the time they get through the screening process, then they've passed their exam. And
sure,
the exam itself is a graduation, but
right,
it's still physical. But, you know, how are you going to fail people when you got 90 people out there?
Yeah.
So his job, he has to, the unpleasant task sometimes of telling Mrs. Jones that, well, Billy, no, he's not ready yet. He's still not ready. So he does that, but that way also it allows him then to know what we need to go back and stress in our instructor training program. If he sees one area of our curriculum that's starting to slip a little bit, then that's where he puts his energy and his emphasis when we're working with our staff people. So from that standpoint, it helps keep our curriculum tight, and it helps keep these guys all, you know, making sure that they're doing the job in that regard. And it also helps them to continue to improve themselves physically, and that's very important as well. Those guys need to be working out, and they need to, you know, still be excited about their own physical progress. So we try to do things like that to help encourage that. Then I come in afterwards, and they're all sitting there sweating, and I go ahead and we talk business.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, you know, it's any number of things, and it's a fairly social meeting. I mean, we're talking numbers. But at the same time, I use it as an opportunity to be able to look everybody in the eye and see how they're doing and if there's any issues or problems. I mean, I've always had a pretty much open door policy for dealing with staff issues. And so, you know, nearly every day somebody's coming by to see me talk about something. But I think that's very critical in order to really keep your people loyal and keep them happy and keep them motivated, just to be able to know that, you know, that they you'll listen to what their concerns are. So we use that for that as well. It's a very social type meeting, but at the same time we talk about serious issues.
Yeah. And would it be? I've always told people when you when you go into multiples as opposed to a single school operation, I mean, really your only job is hire the right people, train them properly, and then keep your finger on the pulse to kick them in the ass when they need it, and pat them on the back when they need it, and keep them pointed in the right direction.
All of that's true.
Yeah,
that's true. We hope anyway that our the leadership that we try to provide for them is one that is a happy leadership. I don't want the guys to be afraid of me or afraid to when I walk in the door. I want that to be a pleasant thing, and so I've always, again, tried to be available to listen to them if they have any kind of problems, anything. I'm here to help them with that, and every one of those guys over the period of years, I'm sure, has come in and needed a little financial assistance from time to time. We've always been able to do that, and so I want it to be that kind of thing. I want them to feel like that this is not just a business or a company, but it's more of a family.
Yeah,
and that's again, I think, why we were able to keep. But everybody knows that whoever it is that's out there running that school, that is the single most important factor of that school. We've had schools that were not doing well, and we think, well, it's been there for a long time. We've probably worn out the market. It's not a great location. You start rationalizing all this stuff, and then you put in somebody that's all excited, enthusiastic, and fired up, and all of a sudden that school comes to life again.
Yeah.
So.
99% of the time, it's the guy.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
I almost say 100%.
Yeah. The when it comes to staff training, and I can't tell you how many people that I talk to on a regular basis, and they think that, well, I trained that guy on all the stuff, he should now know it forever, right?
Yep.
And my joke is always, if you train them on Friday, they're going to forget about what you trained them over the weekend. But you have to keep it. It's just like learning a sidekick. I mean, you've got to teach the mechanics of the sidekick, but then you have to keep practicing and reviewing it. Being kind of an academic nerd, I like the quote from Stephen Hawking: "All systems left on their own tend towards entropy." But staff left to their own, they get 5% to 10% to 20% to 30% off of what it is you want them to do, and hence. Every week, you've got to go back and keep retraining them on different pieces of the system. What's your experience with that?
Well, I have a way of kind of keeping up with what goes on in the schools. The night the guys have to send me over, every night they all send me over a ledger that shows them what kind of business is going on, and I review all that very carefully. And if I start to see something getting a little sloppy in the reporting. And that tells me that, well, they're probably getting sloppy and everything else. And so then that's when my son Kelly, I said, okay, we need to go check out what's going on at so-and-so. And he'll be out there. And then he sits down and goes over, the problem areas. And so there's a lot of one-on-one training that he does on a nightly basis whenever we start to feel like there's some kind of a problem or a sore spot or something that's not working like it should. And so that has really helped to keep, these guys on task that way, and it keeps them from getting sloppy or slipping into bad habits. But it's a lot like plate spinning. You remember the old guys that used to have the plates on the stick. You can never rest because it's just by the time you think they're all spinning good, one starts to wind down, and you got to run over there and start spinning.
Yeah.
So it's an ongoing deal, and that's the downside of a multiple school type of situation versus having one school is that. You're dealing with other people, and people sometimes quit. People sometimes get fired. Every time you multiple a school, you multiple your headaches potentially as well.
Yeah. Well,
I've got no hair, and I'm sure it has to do with having 11 cry school.
Yeah. Well, I was having the conversation with Grandmaster Ree. We all know how fit he is, and I said to him, I said, behind the scenes, I said, look. When I was in Washington, don't take this wrong, but you were probably 45 years old and you weren't in the kind of shape, and he was about the same age that I was when I was asking the question. I said, you were 45 years old and you weren't in the kind of shape you're in now. He says, I said, what's the difference? He goes, oh, I got rid of all my karate schools. I had time to work out. I'm like, that is not the answer I was looking for.
Well, there's a lot of truth to that. Yeah, my karate ability has gone down considerably since I'm not in a school anymore. But fortunately, I'm able to get out and I work out. It's just not, I'm not in the karate school very much.
Exactly. But the, you know, you said something. I don't want anybody to miss it. Is you're catching problems early on and you know what the symptom is of the problem. And it was interesting. I don't ever heard anybody articulate it quite that way. Is when the numbers they're giving you, not the numbers them. Hello.
We're still here. I'm not sure where
that's
wrong. That's interesting. How did we lose him? He's three-way you in. Are you still there? Okay, well, that's interesting. Well, okay, so I don't know if we're going to be able to rescue them from the cell phone abyss. But I guess let's transition over back to...
The fourth time is the charm. I told Master Worley I wouldn't call him back if we dropped again. But right in mid-sentence there again.
And by the way, it was that interesting, impossible situation where you were gone for several minutes longer than he was, which is really weird.
That is weird. Since it's my phone that's dropping both sides of the call.
Exactly.
Anyway, you know, let's shift gears here a little bit, and I'm going to do a couple more interviews with Master Warley. I mean, and he's, as I'm sure everybody in the call can tell, has truly been there, done that. And I don't think there's many people in the industry that are more articulate about it either. So it's interesting because this morning I did a little interview with his brother, Pat, and, who's in a... had eight schools at one time, and now is down to two with some licensed schools as well. But does anybody have any questions before we move on anything that he covered or we've covered so far?
Yeah,
Toby, I want to go back.
Everybody would be muted right now, so if you do have a question specifically, all you have to do is hit *6 on your phone, and you'll be unmuted, and you can chip in.
Well, after that, I want to go back to your original question of how to get your arms around the renewal process, and then how to keep from getting overwhelmed with detail and focus on the priority order implementation, if that's okay.
No, I think that's right. And I was actually in the middle of the parallel, you know, version of this in other businesses, which I think is useful for everybody, just as a from a service standpoint, you know, from solving bigger problems standpoint.
Right.
But again, so anyone who does have specific questions about anything we've accomplished so far, just hit *6 on your phone and you'll be unmuted, and you can just kind of jump in and interrupt, and we'll take that immediately.
Well, if not, let's go back to the question you asked me before we plugged in Master Worley. And the first one was if you're new into the idea of an upgrade process, how do you get your arms around that, and how do you really implement that, right? And, see, I think, first of all, it's all about mindset. Is if you know that the only purpose of making a contact with a human being, whether it be in a fair or a carnival or in a movie theater or at a buddy day or at a pizza party or you know, they responded to a VowPack ad. If you know that the only reason for that contact is to capture all of their information and get them into an introductory class, because if you don't get them into an introductory class, you're not going to get them enrolled. And I think very few people have trouble understanding that, right? You know, if you're at a fair and a carnival and you just hand them a flyer expecting them, they're going to call you someday later, that's a sure route to failure. But we all know that the mission is to get them into the school, because you've got to get them into the school to take a next step. But if you know that, we also know that if you don't enroll them into the school, you're never going to have a student. And once you enroll them, we forget that the mission is now to really get them committed mentally and attitudinally and with the support team. So if it's a child with the parents, if it's an adult with the wife or girlfriend or husband or whoever it might be who's in the support team, for that person and the support team to really be committed to do this long term, to really be committed to get to their black belt, and really be committed to overcome the obstacles and the disappointments and setbacks that are going to go along with becoming proficient at anything. Does that make sense? And, you know, so many times I think we're just so happy to get them in the school that we, like, sign them up and expect that they're going to be, you know, self-motivated forever. Or we just kind of assume that if we enroll people in 12 months, and if they don't get to the end of 12 months, to renew again for another 12 months because they're not serious enough or happy enough or whatever. And so the first part of understanding that is to know that people don't come in the front door dedicated to being a black belt and a mastery. They come in the front door because something got their attention and they want to try this out and see what it's all about. But if we don't get them to train 2, 3, 4, 5 years, if we don't get them to black belt and beyond, what we're assured of is that they're going to be a failure in martial arts, not a success in martial arts, and their exposure is only going to have been entertainment. Does that make sense? And Toby, of you know, many people on the call that I've talked to, and many of the ones that you know aren't on the call but we've talked to, so many people just kind of think that commitment and dedication happens spontaneously in the student, but isn't something that is in our control to create and develop and to nurture and to turn into a commitment. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. I also think that there's an additional layer of that I believe we see a lot in the higher level schools, and especially with, you know, I know that's what we created, and certainly what you've created. But there's also, okay, so what you just described is kind of garnering that commitment to accomplishing what they believe they wanted to accomplish in the beginning, right? I think the next level is you also have an opportunity to serve all those customers at a higher level, to serve those students at a higher level. When a student, you know, a parent in some cases has some predisposition about what you're all about before they come and meet you, right? And they think you're about X, and they think you can solve X problem. And then we can put them into a program that helps them solve X problem. But I think we also have an opportunity to help them solve problem D, E, and F as well. And if they're appropriately approached and if they're appropriately served at solving the original problem that they came in to have solved, if they're over-delivered so much on that they're so happy with what they're getting, many, if not most, would be happy to have you also solve problem E, E, and F for them.
Let's say that more concretely, though, is, see, the first barrier that almost nobody gets over, and I mean, if you look at our industry, 95% of the schools never get beyond this hurdle, is most people never get over the hurdle of taking somebody with an interest and converting them to somebody with a burning desire and an unshakable commitment, right? And so if you treat a karate school like a health club, and you just kind of sign them up, you know, for a short period of time and let them show up when they want to show up, then what happens is you're relying on force feeding a lot of people in the front door, right? And let me give you, you know, a couple of examples. Two close friends of mine that I just talked to in the last couple 24 hours, Keith Hafner and Buzz Durkin. Neither one of them have what we consider to be an upgrade program. So if you come in the door charging, you know, paying $220 or $250 a month, that's really kind of what they always do. But I was talking to Buzz, and in Buzz's case, he said if he goes through his billing report, the average number of months on his billing report that people in his school have been paying is 54 months. You know, in Hafner's case, he's enrolling 7 students a month with 380 active, grossing $80,000 a month. Now, in both of those cases, they have a very high-grossing school that is dependent upon not a bump in the well, what's already a high price, but not a bump in the price, but dependent upon very early on creating burning desire and definitive commitment for somebody to train with that school and make it a lifetime activity rather than just be exposed to it. Does that make sense? And then the next level of that is, how do you get them to pay money more quickly? How do you get them to pay more money up front? And so the next step is, if it's a 3-year program, can you get them to pay it in 18 months? So instead of $200 a month, they pay $400 a month by accelerating the payments. Or if it's a 3-month program, can you get them to write one check and not have any headaches on billing and so forth? And those two strategies will bump a school's revenue in proportion to what their dropout rate is, right? So we all know that if your average student was going to be there 3 years from now anyway, that giving them a discount and getting cash isn't going to, on the long term, benefit you very much. On the other hand, if your average student is going to be there for 12 months, now what you've gotten is you've gotten 24 months prepaid that you may never have collected. So that's the next step, is for almost everybody, because a school like Hafner's or Durkin's is the outlier. That's very unusual to be able to have that kind of retention. And there's strategies behind that, but there's also personality behind it. There's also, you know, a culture that's been developed. We'll talk about that later. But then the third level is, let's say I'm going to have that person for 3 years or 5 years on average. Now it's what you're talking about, is can I get them to go from a $200 a month program to a $400 a month program by layering on an additional outcome or additional benefit, right? And so the way that additional benefit usually gets layered on is it's a little bit about I get to learn more stuff, but that really isn't much of a benefit for many of our students, right? We had one of my coaching clients. And what he was trying to do is, you're learning Taekwondo on the way in the door, and then when you upgraded to one level, you got to also learn Kung Fu, and when you upgraded to another level, you also got to learn Taekwondo. And I said to him, I said, well, that's not a benefit to people. It's just like more stuff. Now, if you can give them a little bit more stuff that looks more fun, you know, and we overlay a little bit of a screamer and some other things like that, that looks more fun. But what you're talking about is, if I can tell the parent you're going to go from having self-esteem and confidence build to really learning effective teamwork, to really learning effective leadership skills, to really learning effective life skills, to really learning, and in the adult market, it's money management skills, career management skills, all the skills to really look, act, and become what it is you want to become. If you can teach them that's overlaying with the curriculum they're already doing, then they're willing to pay more money. So it's a cardio kickboxing program that goes from $227 a month to $497 a month. Or in our case, it's a $197 a month tuition that goes to $359 based upon an additional layer of services that they'll receive. And that's really the third layer, right? But what I see is where I think a lot of people get bogged down is they're fixated on how can I get somebody to pay an extra $100 a month without having solved how do I get them really to make an unshakable commitment that they want to do this as a lifetime activity and they want to really achieve to a black belt. And then when they ask people for the extra $100 a month, they haven't gotten the first one.
Yeah, Yeah, that's extremely common. In fact, that one specific conversation yesterday with my people former guys was exactly that very same thing, where it was such a flaky sale on the front end, right? Like there's, you know, basically no commitment, basically no contract, month to month, they cancel whenever they want. See, they never really persuaded that client, that student, that this is something that they should do until black belt or for any amount of time. It was they basically, the customer thought about it like football or baseball or soccer, right? Probably even less because they weren't even thinking about a season, right? See, if you go back to that customer and try to go sell them a four-year program to black belt, see, you haven't, they're not even thinking that way right now. You know what I mean? You haven't overcome that in their mind yet. So on the initial sale, on the initial enrollment, you know, making it, quote, quote, easier for you to get that sale closed doesn't really help you in the long run. You've got to overcome that. If that's in their mind, if that's in their head, I don't know if Johnny's going to stick with this. If that's what's in their head, you've got to fix that. If you don't fix it...
I would say it differently. I would say that that's in everybody's head. And what most people do is they set up their enrollment process to encourage that line of thinking.
Exactly.
As opposed to reframe that line of thinking. Is if you let them come in, I mean, I don't know if he's on the call or not, but one of our Inner Circle members, the enrollment was you don't pay anything for 6 weeks or 8 weeks. And then and you sign the contract, but in 8 weeks we ask if you want to cancel. And if you want to cancel, we let you go. And after that, it's a 12-month commitment on our side to lock in the tuition, but with 30 or 60 days notice any time you can cancel. Well, just telling somebody the terms is teaching them that this is something that doesn't require commitment. And we forget that everything that we do and every interaction that we have and the way that we use our vocabulary is teaching them how to think about this. And, I've got two kids and I enrolled them both in private school. And I got to tell you, the private schools are charging $20,000 a year. You know, they have an introductory process, a little video, and both parents are required to be there. And, you know, if you're enrolling your child in the first grade, they're expecting you're going to be there to sixth grade, and they're not talking about, you know, are you going to try it out this month and see how you like us? And it's a, something where they're qualifying each other to evaluate whether, you know, let's say the school goes to where my daughter's at right now, goes to eighth grade, and, you know, they're expecting new person come in, they're going to be there through eighth grade unless they, you know, relocate. And, you know, good colleges, same way. You know, you don't go to the interview process expecting that you're going to try it out to midterms. You go to the interview process because I want to get a bachelor's degree. It takes 4 years, and they, you know, they believe that you're somebody who will stick it out and be capable and have the tools. And if we think of our school like a gym, or think of it like, you know, a health club or a recreational activity, Master Worley said it, is it means that we're worth $75 a month and we're not worth making a commitment to. But if we're a high-end private school, whether it's for an adult or for a child, and we give them the language to think about it that way, then it all works.
Yeah, and so, well, and by the way, on the private school model, you know, you don't pay them a month to go to class for a month. You pay them, you know, $18,000 in July, and then you're good for the year. You know, I mean, it's like, you know.
Well, the contract I just signed, in all fairness, they had three options. You know, $20,000 now, three equal payments of, you know, $75,000 for $7,000, whatever it was, or 6 or 7 months, I forget which, of payments with, you know, the payments for the school year term being done in January or February, at which time you're signing a recommitment for the following year. So, and again, I mean, that's commonplace throughout the country. You know, and frankly, with the economy tanking, there's been a flight to private schools, so people are paying for something that they receive for free. You know, paying for it already through their property taxes, and then paying for it again because they want a bump in quality.
absolutely. The whole system is a point of my area of concern, but yeah, I totally agree.
So, you know, I mean, hopefully that answers the question, but I think the biggest thing is, and when I was talking to Buzz Durkin yesterday, he said this, but so many martial arts school owners say they teach confidence and self-esteem and then don't have it themselves when it comes to operating their school. And so if you're saying to me, God, I've been struggling already financially, charging them $75 down, $75 a month with no more than a 3-month commitment, and now you're saying I should be charging $400 down, $149 a month with a 12-month commitment, you know, nobody will do that. That's not really what they mean. Either consciously or subconsciously, they mean I don't have faith or confidence in myself to ask for and receive that compensation because I don't truly believe that underlying it all, I'm worth it. Right? And I think that's most of the time is, and it's also why the psychology is difficult to get somebody who's used to making $30,000 a year to get them to go to making $30,000 a month. Because at some point, their set point sets in. And it becomes uncomfortable to be now making more money than anybody else in the family, to now making more money than anybody else in the neighborhood. I had one of my coaching clients a couple years ago, and you know, I went out and did a day of consulting with him. And first thing I did is I said, well, you got to move out of the neighborhood. It's a crap car you're driving. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, you wake up every morning surrounded with people who are making $30,000 a year, and you're driving a car that's 15 years old and worth $500, and your mind doesn't believe it when, because he's already making $120,000 a year. I said, your mind doesn't believe it when you try to tell it that you can make $300,000 because you're living like you make $20,000.
You know, I think that's extremely valid. It actually goes a layer deeper than what I was thinking about when I was preparing for today's call, which I think is really good. You know, my version of that is I've got a brother-in-law who's an attorney. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what I think is good about law school is what they do is they do surround you with other folks who are planning to have a six-figure income when they graduate, right? But my brother-in-law, his family structure is such and his upbringing is such that he's a very good litigator, but he will be broke for the rest of his life. Right, he's very good technically at what he does, but I watch him run away from money at every opportunity. Right?
Yeah.
See, law school. I think the typical person when they graduate from law school, they have an expectation of earning $150,000, $200,000 a year, and he did too. But then, like you said, he kind of ended up over time. He tried to work for himself, right? So over time, he ended up not being surrounded by other successful attorneys moving forward, but instead being kind of surrounded by himself, right, alone with his own thoughts. And his set point kind of kicks back in, and he starts to trend back toward thinking that he should be broke, right? So, I mean, it's exactly the same thing. Now, think about the average martial arts school owner's upbringing. They were surrounded by other school owners who were probably struggling and other and school owners who were railing against the guy down the street who's making a bunch of money and calling him a charlatan and a sellout. So that's the type of cultural influence that we have to overcome in our industry. So, I think it's exactly parallel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's right down the line, and it's the biggest jump is being able to get your own mind around having a lifestyle that's 10 times where you're at now. And, you know, as you know, I mean, I've told people it's not a process, just frickin' do it. And, you know, if I was in a school, walked in as doing $5,000 a month right now, I could take the reins. The next month it did 30. Probably the month after that it would do 50. But it's because I'm not willing to sit in a school doing $5,000 a month. It's just what my expectation would be. But the biggest thing is getting somebody to be able to think the way that you and I and all of the other financially successful school owners think about what they should be doing and what the numbers are. And to a great extent, it's not about technical knowledge, although that's necessary. It's about just frickin' do it.
You know, I don't know if it's worth. We've only got about 9 minutes left. I would submit that perhaps it's worth drawing this specific model for everybody. So let's say I'm in a school right now, and my current process is I enroll them on, let's say, a 3 to 6 month agreement, and then at the end of the agreement, I enroll them for a year, then I enroll them for a year, then I enroll them for a year. And what I'm trying to do now is what I want to do is kind of follow your lead and follow this process that we know is replicatable and successful. And I want to move them at month 2-ish to month 4-ish. I want to move them to my leadership program or some higher level program, some program that serves them better. Okay, and I've got 100 students.
Well, here's
the opportunity. How do I go with it?
Well, here's the first thing. Is stop thinking in terms of you're doing a 1 or 2 lesson introductory process to show them about the school and get them to make a decision. And start thinking of it as you're doing a 16 to 22 lesson introductory process to get them committed to train to Black Thought and Beyond. And now recognize that the only point of the first 2 months is to get them committed that they're going to be a Black Belt. And forget about everything else, right? It almost doesn't matter what you teach them. Almost doesn't matter how good they become at it. What does matter is that they make incremental progress, feel like they're learning something, are having fun, and have gone through the steps to really understand why it is they want to be a Black Belt and a long-term student with you. Does that make sense? And so now, the first couple lessons is only about getting an intermediate step where they make a first-level commitment, and then the next 2 months is about them making the right, you know, the full commitment to the deal. And you tell them that that's what you do. You tell them about that's how it works appropriately along the process. You know, and everybody in the school comes here, you know, it's a Black Belt school. The goal is to train and get your Black Belt. It takes, you know, 3-4 years to do that. You know, we're going to start with just a trial to evaluate, make sure we feel comfortable with supporting and committing and agreeing to do that with you on a long-term basis. Over the next couple of months, we're going to do some evaluations and give you more information and then make a decision about whether we're all willing to commit to Joey being a Black Belt or not. So, see that's the first step, is to make that your logic is, you don't wipe your brow and sigh a big sigh of relief when they're enrolled, but you know that's just like they paid $29 for an introductory program. You know, it's just a first step towards what really is the mission, is that renewal. Right, and then the question is how much self-esteem and how much of a belief system do you have in yourself for what you can charge? So, you know, if the first step is $149 a month and the second step is $249 a month, the only issue is not what they're willing to pay, but it's what you're willing to and believe in is reasonable for you to accept for your services. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and so, what's the level of value they perceive?
Right, exactly. But it's mostly about the guy. I mean, it's mostly about the owner, right? Is you can present yourself in such a way that they believe the same product and outcome is worth $75, $150, $250, $500, $1,000 a month for the exact same thing. And my guess is there's nobody that we've allowed in peak performers or in a circle who hasn't created some Black Belts. And there aren't any of the Black Belts that you've created that if you ask them, would this have been worth $300 a month to you in retrospect, would say no. So if that's true, you already have the thing in place. You may not be very good at explaining to people early on. And, see, I think that's where a lot of people get bogged down, is they think, well, I have to create all this new stuff, and I have to create this leadership thing, and I have to create all these books. And no. You just have to, like, believe you're worth it. And then you've got to know that there's a process by which you have to educate them to make the commitment to be successful with you. And then once you educate them to be successful, then you can implement all that other stuff and create the terminology. But we all know the reason why the black belts tell you that it was a priceless experience wasn't because they so highly value the rear naked chokehold or the side thrust kick, right? I mean, it's not even on their radar that that's what was valuable. And it's not valuable that they learned to free spar, they learned to grapple. What was valuable is they made friends, developed relationships, grew in their own personal confidence in themselves, physically, mentally, and attitudinally. And they had a mentor that cared about them and taught them and helped them develop. And that if they look back in retrospect, their life has changed measurably for the better because of that relationship. Right? And see, we all get bogged down in talking about it in terms of, you know, you learn Chun-Ji, or you learn, you know, to do this takedown, or you learn, you know. But that's not what's valuable.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was what I was thinking. The only challenge is how you can get them to perceive that value, you know, what their perception of it is.
Yeah, and the best way is to talk to all the ones that you developed in that process, get them to say it in their own words, and then share that with all of your beginning students. I mean, that's the best.
Exactly. So if I'm, in 2 minutes, so if I've got 100 current active students, the opportunity for me to create this, you know, this renewal, this upgrade process, this other thing, this other program, whatever it is, you know, is it reasonable to think that, you know, 40, 50, 70 of these students would love to benefit more greatly from what I'm providing? Right.
Yeah, well, let's say that I've got 100 students paying $100 a month, month to month, or on a year contract, either way, right? Is really what I should have is if I'm sloppy, 50 of them that would be willing to renew to the next new thing if you give them enough reasons to. And 75 of them, if you're good at it, that would renew to the next new thing. So let's say that it's now a 3-year deal, and it's $220 a month. So extrapolate that quickly, that's $7,200, let's say. So $7,200, what's that?
No, that, yeah, that's exactly right. Make it $200 a month to $7,200, makes it easy. And then.
Yeah. Yeah, so I've got a $7,200 program that I can get 50 people. That's $350,000. Or 75 people, which is almost $500,000, into. And then I should be able to, you know, depending upon how I structure it, I probably have, let's say, 20 people who would be willing to pay in full. And maybe it's only 10, but if it was 10 at $6,500, that's $65,000 this month. And if it was 20, that's $130,000. Most of the times that I've done this, and it's, as you know, it's a lot of times, we've managed to do somewhere between $80,000 and $120,000 in 6 weeks. Cash.
Exactly, yeah. And what we're talking about is kind of like low-end. I'm not very good at this. So again, if I've got 100 students and I can only get half of them to do this thing.
And I only get 20% of them paying full. Yeah.
Exactly. And even if it's 10%. So let's say it's 5 people that rate HF for $6,000, that's $30,000 next month, that, you know, done deal, right?
Yeah, you didn't have otherwise.
And here, from a belief standpoint and from, like, a confidence level standpoint, here's what happened to me. What happened to me was I started offering accelerated payments, right? So I started offering them. I had never done that before. It was month, they paid every month, and that was how it worked. So I started offering. I thought that the market couldn't bear a higher price point. That was my belief, right? And so we started offering accelerated payments. So we would get the yes on the monthly commitment, and then we would go back to them and say, oh, by the way, you know, there's a couple other ways you can handle this. You can do a one-time payment, or you can do a three consecutive payments or six, right? So we gave them two other options other than paid in full. Obviously, you do it one step at a time, but we gave them two other options. And I didn't really pay much more attention to it. I just noticed that the revenue in the schools were all going up, right? And I didn't really pay much attention to how stable it would be. Until the end of the year, when I sat down with my partner and we looked at all the books, and we found out that we had almost 40% of our students who chose to pay accelerated payments, right? So that told me that certainly the market could bear it. We just had to figure out how to show them that it was to their advantage and that there was value to it. So then we just started getting better at that. We started getting better at showing them the value of it to say yes to the accelerated option. And that's when you can, you know, make huge improvements in all this stuff. The advantage that you guys all have, that you all have, is that you don't have to go through all the process that I had to go through. Right? We've got the blue, you know.
Well, and you haven't left out the next step is, you know, what our version was is, you know, paying for a 4-year program in 2 years, and then figuring out that everybody would pay the 4-year program in 2 years at that price point. So if they'll pay that price point, why not make it over 4 years? Because the deciding factor was how much it was monthly, not how long they paid for it, right? So I went from selling them a 4-year program paid in 2 years, you know, presenting it as there's 2 years free at the end, to presenting a 4-year program at the same price point, with the same monthly payment, but in practical terms at double the price point, because now it was paid over 4 years, and then doing an accelerated option at double that price, and admittedly had a fewer number of people take it at that point, but we were already charging essentially the accelerated price for the full length of term. One of our early coaching clients, Nico Pellet in San Diego, took him from $15,000 a month to $50,000 a month, and the first jump was just that, is he was charging a certain price point already on an accelerated deal, and we said, well, if they'll pay it for 12 months for a 36-month program, why don't we just have them pay it 36 months for a 36-month program? He said, oh, they won't do that. I bet they will, and sure enough, it was no problem. And then we did an accelerated thing and bumped it by 100%. It was no problem either.
Yeah, exactly. It's all what they perceive to be valuable. And you know, it's academic. You've got the blueprint, right? It's very easy to do. And then it's just execution.
But let's answer one other question in a shorthand. The other thing is, if you're new into this deal, how do you keep from getting bogged down? Right? So how do you keep from getting lost in all the detail, right? And, you know, and worrying about 100 different priorities. And see, that's the purpose of the one-on-one calls we do, is for us over the phone, metaphorically, to kind of slap you around and say, no, first thing you need to focus on is put the upgrade process in place. Second thing you need to do is fix your intro ratios. Third thing you need to do is flood the pipeline with intros. And by the way, that's not what everybody
does. Let me back you up. I haven't said the only thing you have to make sure that you know before making those decisions is you do have to know what your enrollment ratios already currently look like. Because if there's a big problem with enrolling people initially, then trying to move people to a higher level ain't going to do you much good. We got to fix, you know, you do have to make sure that the front end is at least marginally effective, right?
Keep in mind, I wasn't saying that's the steps for everybody. The purpose of the call, and frankly, the purpose of keeping good numbers and getting them to us before the call, is so that we can just hone in on what the priorities are. You know, we have some people who want to create a different curriculum, and there's some people who want to, you know, spend all their time on brown belt curriculum, and other people who want to spend their time. You know, I had one of them, maybe on the call, already was getting 40, 45 intros a month. And every time we talked, wanted me to work with him on marketing. I said, well, hell no. The problem is they're all dropping out in 90 days. We got to fix your class. He goes, oh, I'm a great teacher. I said, no, they're all dropping out in 90 days. We got to fix your class. And then we've got to fix your renewal process. And then we got to fix your sales ratios. And then we'll worry about all that other stuff because you're already getting enough people to... with that many intros a month, you could be running $100,000 a month school. Just as an instructor, you suck. So, I mean, everybody has a different problem, right? And so that's the purpose of the one-on-one calls we do, and it's the purpose of keeping good stats, is for us to be able to diagnose where the low-hanging fruit is.
Exactly right.
And again, what so many people do is they try to go in and, you know, get 28 different ideas and end up with a 152-point to-do list. But, you know, with you or I on the phone, we're gonna narrow it down to the top three or four things. Hopefully everybody found our conversation with Master Worley very valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, if anybody has any specific questions about anything, feel free to shoot me an email. And then make sure you check your schedule for this Keystone Retreat. That's a very, you know, useful and valuable opportunity. So thanks for everybody being on the call, and we'll see you next time.